make an ado, and so swallowed his loss as best he could. But these yellow turbans grew bolder as their numbers swelled, and they began to long for guns, for their only guns were the few that runaway soldiers among them had. They grew more bold, therefore, in their marauding among the common people, although they still did not come near any large towns or cities, but kept themselves to small villages and hamlets. At last, some of the more courageous among the farmers came to Wang the Tiger, and told him, and they made report of how marauders grew bold because they were unchecked, and they would come in the night to rob, and if they did not find all they liked, they would kill a household of farming folk and think nothing of the deed. But Wang the Tiger did not know whether to believe the tale or not, for when he sent spies out to ask other farmers, there were weak ones who were afraid to tell, and they denied the whole matter. And so Wang the Tiger for a time did nothing, thinking lightly of it when his whole mind was set on the right moment to declare himself in the great war. But the time of the great heat of summer came on, and many armies marched through to the south, and there were some of these soldiers who were lured away to the robber band, and the robbers grew greatly in numbers and daring. At this season of the year also the sorghum cane grew very high in those parts, and it made a very perfect hiding place for robbers, and they grew so bold, and it came to such a pass, that people did not dare to travel off the highway except in a large number together. Now whether Wang the Tiger would have believed how bad it was or not cannot be said, for he was somewhat at the mercy of his men, and he must believe what his spies and his own trusty men thought, and they overpraised him, and made him think none would dare to stand before him. But one day there came in from the country to the west two brothers, two farmers, and they carried a hempen bag with them. They would not open this bag for anyone to see, and they said steadfastly to all questions asked them, "This bag is for the general." And supposing they brought a gift to Wang the Tiger, the guards let them through the gates, and they went to the hall of audience, and there Wang the Tiger sat, for it was the hour when he often did so. When the two brothers came before him, they made their obeisances, and then, without a further word, they opened the hempen bag and took from it two pairs of hands, one the hands of a very old woman, worn and hard with work, and the dark skin cracked and dry, and the other the hands of an old man, calloused in the palms with the holding of the handle of a plow. These hands the two brothers held up by the stumps where the blood now was black and dried. Then the elder of the brothers, a very earnest, angry man of middle age, his face square and honest, said, "These are the hands of our old parents, and they lie dead. 2 days ago the robbers marauded in our hamlet, and when my old father cried out that he had nothing, they cut off his two hands. And when my old mother bravely cursed them, they cut off hers also. We two brothers were in the fields, but our wives escaped and came screaming to us, and we ran back with our forks. But the robbers were gone, for there had been no great band of them, only 8 or 10, and our parents were old. Yet not one in the village dared to lift his hand to help them, lest they suffer at some later time. Sir, we let you have the revenues, and we pay you a heavy tax over and above what we must pay the state. And we pay on land and on salt and on all we buy and sell, and we do it to be protected from robbers. What will you do?" And they held up the worn, stiff, old hands of their parents. Now Wang the Tiger did not, as many a man in his place would have done, grow angry at such bold speech. No, he was astounded at the tale, and he grew angry, not because the farmers had dared to tell him, but that such a thing could be in his regions. He shouted out for his captains, and they came in, one by one, as they were found here and there, until there were some 50 of them in the hall. Then Wang the Tiger himself picked up the dead hands from where they lay helplessly upon the tiled floor, and he showed them to all, and he said, "These are the hands of good farming folk who were marauded and robbed in the daytime, when their sons worked in the fields. Who goes first against these marauders?" The captains stared, and the sight roused them, and they were roused to think that robbers dared to rob in lands belonging to them, and they muttered together and said here and there, "Shall we let this go on in a land where we have the first right? Shall these accursed thieves grow great in our own lands?" And they cried out, "Let us go against them." Wang the Tiger turned then to the two brothers, and he said, "Return to your homes in peace and confidence. Tomorrow these will go out, and I shall not rest until I find out who the head of these robbers is, and deal with him as I dealt with the leopard. Then the younger brother spoke, and he said, Most gracious, we think there is no head yet, and they wander in little bands, separate from one another except as their name links them, and they look for one strong man to hold them together. If this is so, said Wong the tiger, it will be the easier to scatter them. But not to stamp them out, said the older brother, bluntly. Then the two farmer brothers waited on there as they had more to say, and did not know how to say it. And at last, after being impatient for a while in himself because they did not go, Wong the tiger perceived they mistrusted him, and he grew somewhat angry and said, Do you doubt that I am strong enough who killed the leopard, a mighty robber in his day, and he lived on you more than 20 years? The two brothers looked at each other, and the elder one swallowed his spittle and said slowly, Most gracious, it is not that, but we have something to say to you in private. Wong the tiger turned to the captains who still stood about, and he shouted to them to be gone and prepare their men. When they were all gone except the one or two whom Wong the tiger always kept about him, the elder brother fell on his face, and he knocked his head 3 times upon the tiles, and he said, Do not, most gracious, be very angry. We are poor men, and when we ask a favor, we can but ask it, and we have no money to pay bribes to ensure it. And Wong the tiger said in surprise, What is it? I do not ask for bribes, if you ask a thing I can do. The man answered humbly, When we came here today, our village brothers tried to hold us back, because they said if we brought the soldiers, it would be worse than the robbers, for they demand so much, and we are poor men who must work if we eat. The robbers come and go, but the soldiers live on in our houses, and look at our maids, and eat what we keep for the winter, and we dare not oppose them because they have weapons. Most gracious, if your soldiers are to come like this, then keep them, and we will suffer what we must. Now Wong the tiger was a good man, and he was furious when he heard this, and he rose and shouted for his captains to come again. And when they came back in twos and threes, he roared at them, and made his face very black, and he drew his brows down at them, and he said, This region I rule over is small enough so that men can go out and be back on the 3rd day, and so they shall do. Every man of mine shall be away no more than 3 days, and if any quarters himself upon the people, I will have him killed. If they overcome the robbers and rout them, I will reward them with silver and food and wine. But I am no robber chief, and I have no robber band. And he glared at the captains in so fierce a way that they promised him hastily. Thus Wong the tiger did, and he sent the brothers away with his promise, and they took the hands of their parents and put them reverently into the hempen bag again, so that the old pair might be buried whole and with all their parts, and they returned to their village full of the praises of Wong the tiger. But when Wong the tiger had sent the brothers away and took time to think what he had promised, he was in some dismay to find where his kind heart had carried him, and he sat in his own room very sober, for he had no mind to lose his good men and his guns in a brawl with robbers. He knew, too, that there must be some in his army, such as are in every army, who are idle and looking for a better place, and these might even be enticed away to the robbers and take their guns with them. So he sat there brooding and thinking he had been too hasty and too moved by the token the brothers brought. And as he sat there, a messenger came with a letter, and it was from his brother, Wong the merchant. Wong the tiger tore the end and took the letter out and read it, and there in devious, winding words, his brother told him that the guns were come, and would be left at a certain place on a certain day, and they were hidden in bags of grain brought for making flour in the great northern mills. Now Wong the tiger was in as great a puzzle as he ever had been, for he had to fetch the guns somehow, and yet his men were scattered over the countryside against robbers. He sat a while and cursed the day to himself, and as he sat, the woman he loved came in. She was unusually gentle and languid as she walked, for it was the middle day of the great heat of summer, and she wore only a white silk coat and trousers, and she had unbuttoned the collar of her coat at the throat, so that her neck showed out, very soft and full and paler than her face. Now Wong the tiger, for all his cursing and trouble, saw her, and he was caught and held at the sight of her pretty throat, and he held his trouble back for an instant, and he longed to lay his fingers there upon her pale neck, and he waited until she came near. She did come near and leaned upon the table, and she said to him, looking at the letter he still held, "Is there anything wrong with you that you look so black and angry?" Then she waited and laughed a little, a small, high laugh, and she said, "I hope it is not I, for I would be afraid you might kill me with such black looks as you have now." Wang the Tiger held the letter out to her, saying nothing, but his eyes fixed upon her bare throat and upon the smoothness of the turn it made into her bosom. He had come to such a pass with this woman that even in this short time he told her everything. She took the letter and read it, and he could take thought to be proud that she could read, and he deemed her beautiful beyond anything as she bent over the letter, her thin, sharply marked lips moving a little as she read. Her hair was smooth now and oiled and knotted at her neck into a little net of black silk thread, and in her ears were hung gold rings. She read the letter, and then put it into its envelope again, and laid it on the edge of the table, and Wang the Tiger watched her quick, light hands, thin and quick as she did this, and then he said, "I do not know how to get those bags of grain. I must get them by some guile or force." "That is not hard," said the woman smoothly. "Guile and force are easy. I have a plan already in my head, made as I read the letter. You need only to send a band of your men as though they were robbers, the robbers that men tell of nowadays, and let them seem to rob the grain for themselves, and who will know you have anything to do with it?" Now Wang the Tiger laughed his noiseless laugh when she said this, because it seemed to him so wise a plan, and he drew her to him, for he was alone in the room, and the guards went outside the door whenever she came, and he satisfied himself with his hard hands on her soft flesh, and he said, "There has never been a woman so wise as you. When I killed the leopard that day, I blessed myself in that deed." And after he had satisfied himself, he went out and called for the hawk, and he said, "The guns we need are at a place about 30 miles from here, where the two railroads cross, and they are in bags of grain as though to be transshipped there to the northern mills. But take 500 men and arm yourselves, and dress yourselves like some breed of robbers, and go there and seize those bags, and seem to carry them away to a lair. But have carts and asses ready at a near place, and bring the bags here, grain and all." Now the hawk was a clever man, and he trusted to his wits and to guile, whereas the pig butcher trusted to his two great fists that were as large as earthen bowls, and a wily deed like this pleased him, and so he bowed. Then Wang the Tiger said further, "When all the guns are here, be sure I will reward you, and every soldier shall have a reward measured to what he has done." Then when this was done, Wang the Tiger went back into his room. The woman was gone, but he sat back in his armchair of carved wood, which had a woven reed seat for coolness, and he unfastened his girdle and his coat at the throat, for the day grew to a monstrous heat, and he sat and rested himself, and thought of her throat and the turn it made into her bosom, and he marveled that flesh could be so soft as hers, and how skin could be so smooth. Not once did he note that the letter his brother had written was gone, for the woman had taken it and thrust it deep into the bosom of her robe, where not even his hands had reached it. Now when the hawk had been gone for half a day, Wang the Tiger walked alone in the cool of the night before he went in to sleep, and he walked in the court near a side gate that was open to the street, a small street where few people passed, and those only by day. And as he walked, he heard a cricket cheep. At first he paid no heed to it, because he had so much to dream of. But the cricket cheeped on, and at last he heard it, and it came to him that this was not the time of the year for a cricket, and so out of idle curiosity he looked to see where it was hid. It came from the gate, and as he looked out into the gathering dusk, he saw someone crouched and shapeless by the gate. He put his hand to his sword and stepped forward, and there in the gathering dusk he saw his nephew's pocked face turned palely toward him, and the lad whispered breathlessly, "No sound, my uncle. Do not tell your lady I am here, but come into the street when you can, and I will wait for you at the first forks. I have something to tell you, and it must not wait." The youth was off like a shadow then, but Wang the Tiger would not wait, since he was alone, and he went after the shadow, and came first to the spot. Then he saw his nephew come sliding along in the darkness of the walls, and he said in great astonishment, "What ails you that you come creeping along like a beaten dog?" And the youth whispered, "Hush, I have been sent to a place far from here. If your lady saw me here, and she is such a clever one, I do not know who she has watching me. She said she would kill me if I told, and it is not the first time she has threatened me." When Wong the Tiger heard this, he was too astonished to speak. He lifted the lad half off his feet and dragged him into the darkness of an alley, and he commanded him to speak. Then the lad put his mouth to Wong the Tiger's ear, and he said, "Your woman sent me with this letter to someone, but I do not know to whom, for I have not torn it open. She asked me if I could read, and I said no, how could I, being country bred? And she gave me this letter then, and told me to give it to a certain man who would meet me at the tea-house in the north suburb tonight, and she gave me a piece of silver for it." He thrust his hand into his bosom, and brought out a letter, and Wong the Tiger seized it without a word. Without a word he strode through the alley to a small street, where an old man opened a little solitary shop to sell hot water, and there, by the flickering light of the small bean oil lamp that was hung upon a nail on the wall, Wong the Tiger tore open the letter and read it. And as he read, he saw plainly there was a plot. She, his woman, had told someone of his guns. Yes, he could see she had met someone and told him, and here in the letter she laid a last command. She wrote, "When you have the guns and are gathered, I will come." Now when Wong the Tiger read this, it was as though the earth he stood upon whirled out from under his feet, and as though the heavens came down to crush him. He had loved this woman so heartily and so well that he never dreamed she would betray him. He had forgot every warning his trusty, hair-lipped man gave him, and he never saw the man's downcast looks these days. And he loved the woman to such a point that he longed exceedingly for but one more thing, and it was that she would give him a son. Yes, he asked her again and again, and with what ardor every time, whether she had conceived or not. He had so loved her he did not dream she could withstand him in her heart. At this very hour he had been waiting even to go to his love, waiting for the night. Now he saw she had never loved him. She could plot like this at the very hour when he waited for the turn of war and his own great step forward. She could plot like this and lie all night in his bed and pretend sorrow when he asked concerning his son. He was suddenly so angry he could not draw his breath. That old black anger of his rose in him blacker than he had ever known it to come. His heart beat and roared in his ears, his eyes blurred, and his brows knitted themselves until they pained him. His nephew had followed him and stood in the shadow by the door. But Wong the Tiger flung him aside without a word, and never seeing that in the strength of his anger he threw the lad down cruelly upon the sharp stones of the road. He strode back to his courts on the wings of his anger, and as he went he took his sword out of its sheath, the leopard's fine steel sword, and he wiped it upon his thigh as he walked. He went straight into the room where the woman lay in her bed, and she had not drawn the curtain because of the heat. There she lay, and the full moon of that night had risen over the wall of the court, and its light fell upon her as she lay upon the bed. She lay naked for coolness, and her hands were flung out, and one lay curling and half open upon the edge of the bed. But Wong the Tiger did not wait. Although he saw how fair she was, and fair as an image of alabaster in the moonlight, and underneath his rage he knew there was a pain in him worse than death, he did not stay. For the moment he remembered willfully how she had tricked him and how she would have betrayed him, and in this strength he lifted up his sword and he drove it down smoothly and cleanly into her throat, upturned as her head hung over her pillow. He twisted it sharply once, and then he brought it out and wiped it on the silken coverlid. There came a single sound from her lips, but the blood choked it so he did not know what she said, and she did not move except that the instant his sword was in her throat, her arms and legs flew up and her eyes burst open. Then she died. But Wong the Tiger would not stop to think what he had done. No, he strode out into the court and he shouted, and his men came running, and he threw his commands at them harsh and sure in his anger. He had to go now without a moment's delay to the succor of the hawk and see if he could not reach the guns before the robbers did. All his men left he took with him except 200 whom he left under the captaincy of his hair-lipped man, and he led the others out himself. As he passed through the gate he saw the old man who watched there come out of his bed yawning and dazed at all the sudden commotion, and Wong the Tiger shouted at him as he rode by on his horse, "There is something in my room where I sleep. Go and carry it out and fling it into a canal or some pond. See to it before I return." And Wong the Tiger rode on very high and proud and nursing his anger. But inside his breast it was as though his heart dripped blood secretly into his vitals, and however he brooded and blew upon the flame of his anger, his heart dripped steadily and secretly within. And he groaned restlessly of a sudden, although none heard it in the dull thudding of horses' feet upon the dusty road. Neither did Wong the Tiger himself know that he groaned over and over again. All over that countryside did Wong the Tiger roam with his men that day and the next day, seeking the hawk, and the sun beat down upon them, for the day came windless. But Wong the Tiger would not let his men rest, because he had that within himself which could not rest, and toward the evening upon the highway that ran north and south, he met the hawk at the head of his band of walking soldiers. At first Wong the Tiger could not be sure if these were his own men, for the hawk had done what he had been told to do, and he had told his men to wear their ragged inner garments and tie a towel about their heads, and Wong the Tiger had need to wait until they came near to see who they were. But at last Wong the Tiger saw these were indeed his own men. He dismounted then from his red horse and sat down under a date tree that was there beside the road, for he was exceedingly spent from within, and he waited for the hawk to come near. The more he waited, the more afraid he grew that his anger might die down, and he forced himself to remember, with a furious pain, how he had been deceived. But the secret of his pain and anger was that although the woman was dead, yet he still loved her. Although he was glad he had killed her, yet he longed for her with passion. This angry pain made him very surly, and when the hawk was come, Wong the Tiger growled at him, scarcely lifting his eyes, and his eyes nearly hidden under his brows. "Well, I will swear you have not the guns." But the hawk had a voluble good tongue of his own in that peaked face of his, and he had a very ready and proud temper, and this temper made him brave, and he answered with heat, and without any courteous words, "How did I know the robbers would have been told of the guns? They had been told by some spy or other, and they went before us. How can I help it if they were told before you told me?" And as he spoke, he threw his gun upon the ground, and folded his arms on his bosom, and he stared mutinously at his general, to show he would not be put down. Then Wong the Tiger, seeing justice still, rose wearily from the grass where he sat, and he stood under the date tree and leaned against its rough trunk, and he unbuckled his belt and drew it more tightly about him before he spoke. But at last he said wearily and with a great bitterness, "I suppose all my good guns are gone, then. I shall have to fight the robbers for them. Well, if we must fight, we will." He shook himself impatiently, and spat and roused himself, and went on with more vigor, "Let us go and find them and press hard on them, and if half of you lie dead after the fray, why then you are dead, and I cannot help it. My guns I must have, and if a gun costs me 10 men or so, why, I will find 10 men more for every gun, and the gun is worth it." Then he mounted his horse again, and held the beast hard when it danced to and fro with impatience that it was taken from the succulent grass that was there. And the hawk stood there moodily watching, and at last he said, "I know well enough where the robbers are. They are gathering together in the old lair, and I can swear they have the guns with them. Who their leader is I do not know, but they have been busy for a few days now, and have given the countryside peace while they gather together, as though they were ready to choose a leader." Now Wong the Tiger knew well who their leader was to have been, but he said no more except to give his men orders to march against that lair, and he said, "We will go there, and you are to fire at them. When the firing is over, I will parley, and every man who brings a gun may join my ranks. For every gun you see and pick up and bring to me, you shall have a piece of silver." And so saying, he mounted his horse once more. Once more Wong the Tiger rode over the winding valley paths, and over the low foothills until he came to the double-crested mountain, and his men came raggedly behind him. The farming folk looked up from their fields and wondered, and the soldiers shouted, We go against the robbers. To this sometimes farmers made answer back heartily, A good deed! But more there were who said nothing, and they looked sourly at the soldiers as they tramped into their fields of grain and cabbages and melons, because they did not believe that any good could come of soldiers, they were so weary of them. Once more did Wang the Tiger ascend the foothills, and at the base of the double-crested mountain, where the pass wound up between cliffs, he dismounted, and led his horse, and so did all his men who rode. But he paid no heed to them. He walked along as though he were alone, his body bent to the mountain, and he thought of the woman, and how strangely he had come to love her, and he loved her still so that he was weeping in himself, and he could scarcely see the mosses of the steps. But he would not repent that he had killed her. No, in spite of his love, he understood in some dim part of him that such a woman who could deceive him so perfectly as she had, when she accepted with smile and with frankness his passion, such a woman could only be true if she were dead. And he muttered to himself, She was a fox after all. So he led his men steadfastly up that mountain, and when he was near to the head of the pass, he sent the hawk and 50 men ahead to see what was in the lair, and he waited in the shade of a cluster of pine trees, for the sun beat down exceedingly hot. In less than an hour, the hawk came back, and he said he had circled about the place, and he gave report. They are all unready, for they are building up the lair again.
Did you see any one above another?
Said Wang the Tiger.
No, I did not, answered the hawk. I crept so close I could even hear what they said. They are very ignorant and unlearned in robbery, for the pass is not guarded, and there they are quarreling among themselves for the houses least ruined.
This was good news, and Wang the Tiger shouted to his men, and at their head he ran swiftly up the pass, and as he ran, he gave great shouts, and he commanded his men to rush into the lair and kill at least a robber apiece, and then stop so that he could parley. So they did, and Wang the Tiger stood to one side, and his men rushed in and shot off around, and everywhere the robbers dropped, dead and writhing and crying bitterness as they died, or lay dying. It was true they were all unprepared and thinking only of their houses and of how they would establish themselves, and there must have been 3,000 or 5,000 of them gathered in that lair, like ants in a mound, all piling earthen walls and carrying timbers and straw for roofs, and planning for future greatness. When they were surprised like this, every man dropped what he did and ran hither and thither, and Wang the Tiger saw there was not one to tell them what to do, and that they had no certain leader. For the first time some slight, weak ray of solace came into Wang the Tiger's heart, for well he knew who would have marshaled them, and it came to him that sooner or later he would have had to fight against the woman he loved, and better to kill her as he did. When he thought of this, his old belief in his destiny rose in him once more, and he shouted to his men in his lordly way, and commanded them to stand, and he cried out to the robbers who were not shot, I am Wang the Tiger, who rules this region, and I will not brook robbers. I am not afraid to kill, and not afraid to die. I will kill every one of you if you think to join others against me. Yet I am a merciful man, too, and I will make a way out for those of you who are honorable men. I return to my encampment now in the county seat. Within the next 3 days I will accept into my ranks any man of you who comes with a gun, and if he brings 2 guns, he shall have a free gift of silver for the extra gun he has. When he had shouted this out, Wang the Tiger called to his men sharply, and they all went clattering down the pass again. Only he made certain of this, that some of his men went down backward, and that they kept their guns upon the pass, lest there come a shot or two from some bolder robber. But the truth was, those robbers were very ignorant men. They had fallen in with the plot of the woman who had been the leopards, and they went eagerly to fetch the guns, yet few of them knew how to hold a gun, and those few only runaway soldiers, and they did not dare to fire upon Wang the Tiger, lest it be nothing but twisting a tiger's whiskers, and he come rushing back upon them and destroy them all. There was complete silence in that mountain, and not a sound came from the lair, and as Wang the Tiger went on his way, there was only the slight rise and fall of the winds in the pines, and a bird calling in a tree, and he led his men down the pass. Back through the fields he led them, and as he went, the soldiers said everywhere in exultation to the farming folk, 3 days, and the robbers will be gone, we swear. Some of the folk were glad and thankful,
but most of them were guarded in their looks and words, and waited to see what Wong the Tiger would want of them, for they had never heard of a lord of war who did anything for a countryside without asking much in return for all he did. Then Wong the Tiger went back to his own courts, and he gave his soldiers each a fee of silver coins, and he ordered wine of a good enough quality to be given to every man, enough to comfort him but not to make him drunken, and he had a few kinds of special meats for them. Then he waited for the 3 days to pass. One by one, or in pairs, or in fives and eights and tens, the robbers began to come straggling into that city from everywhere, bringing guns with them. Seldom did any man bring two guns, for if he had laid his hand on more than one gun, he brought with him a younger friend, or a brother, or some other one, for truly many of these men were in need, and without food enough to eat, and they were glad to seek sure service under a leader somewhere. Wong the Tiger commanded that every sound man not too old be received into his army, and from such as he did not want he took the guns and paid them something, but to such men as he received he gave food and good clothing. When the 3 days were over, he allowed 3 more days of mercy, and after these 3 more, and men came in day after day, until the courts and the soldiers' camps were bursting, and Wong the Tiger was forced to quarter his men into the houses of that town. Sometimes a man who was the father of a family would come to complain that his house was crowded and his family squeezed into a room or two. But if he came and Wong the Tiger saw he was young, or that he was bumptious in his complaining, then Wong the Tiger threatened him and said, "Can you help it? Bear it, then, or would you rather have robbers in the region to despoil you?" But if the one who complained were an old man, or if he came courteously and spoke gently, then Wong the Tiger was courteous too, and he gave him some silver or a gift of some sort, and said courteously, "It is only for a short time, for I shall march to the war soon. I shall not rest content always with so small a county seat for my capital." And he said everywhere to all, and he said with some savage bitterness, because he had no woman of his own any more, and it galled him in some secret unknown way to think of any man with any woman, "If any soldier of mine looks on a woman forbidden, tell me, and he is dead." And he quartered the new soldiers in the houses nearest him, and he threatened them heartily if they did so much as look at a good woman. To every soldier also Wong the Tiger paid what he promised him. Yes, although he was now hard-pressed for silver, since nearly 4,000 new men had joined him from the robbers, and he had only 2,000 and odd out of the 3,000 guns he had his brother buy for him, yet he paid every man and kept them all content. But he knew he could not always do this unless he could think of some new tax, for he was now drawing upon his own secret stores, and this was a dangerous thing for a lord of war to do, lest if he be suddenly put down and must retreat somewhere for a time, he has nothing then to feed to his men. And Wong the Tiger set himself to think of some new tax. Now the spies that Wong the Tiger had sent out began to gather in again at this time, for the summer was coming to an end, and they all brought the same news. And it was that the southern generals were repulsed once more, and again the north was victorious. This Wong the Tiger believed the more readily because during the last few weeks he had not been hard-pressed as he had been before by the provincial general to send his forces out to battle for him. So Wong the Tiger made haste then, and he sent his nephew and his trusty hair-lipped man, and they took his letter to the capital of the province, and he wrote a courteous letter regretting he had been so long putting down the robbers in that land. But now he was ready to join his forces to the north against the south, and he sent gifts. But his destiny helped him very cleverly again, for on that very day when the pair reached the capital with this letter, truce was sworn and the rebels went south to recover themselves, and the northern armies were given their days of looting for booty as a reward of their victory. So when the general of that province received Wong the Tiger's allegiance, he sent back a courteous acceptance, but he said that this war was over and the autumn come. Yet doubtless there would be other wars and spring would come again, and Wong the Tiger was to hold himself ready for such a time. This was the answer the pair took back to Wong the Tiger, and he received it and was well content. For his name he knew would be among those of the victorious generals, and he had not lost a man and not a gun, and he had his great army whole. Chapter 20. Then the golden winds of autumn blew clear out of the west and over the land once more, and the farmers reaped their harvests, and the full moon swung once more to its height, and the people rejoiced in the coming of the mid-autumn festival, and they made ready to give thanks to the gods for these goods, that there had been no great famine, and only a crop or two scarce, that the robbers had been put down once again, and that wars had not come near their region. And Wong the Tiger took account of himself where he was, and how much he had achieved, and he found he was better this year than last. Yes, he now had 20,000 soldiers under him quartered in the town, and in its suburbs, and he had altogether nearly 12,000 guns. Moreover, he was now known and reckoned among the lords of war, for the weak and unready ruler whom the war had left still sitting in his place had sent out a proclamation of gratitude to all those generals who had helped him to remain when the generals of the South had tried to end his government, and Wong the Tiger's name was among the others to whom he gave thanks and titles. It is true that the title given to Wong the Tiger was not high, and it sounded longer and better than it was, but still it was a title, and for this honor he had not entered a battle or lost a gun. There remained to him this one great difficulty, and it was that at the time for the feast, when it is a time of reckoning for all who lend or borrow, Wong the merchant sent word that he must receive the money for the guns, for others pressed him for payment. Then Wong the Tiger grew quarrelsome, and he parleyed with his brother and sent a man to say that this time he would not pay for the whole of the guns he had lost. And he said to his brother through his messenger, "You should have warned your agents not to turn the guns to the first who came for them." To this Wong the merchant answered with reason, "But how did I know that the ones who brought my own letter for proof and used your name for a sign were not your men?" This Wong the Tiger could not answer, but he had the power of his armies to use for an argument, and so he said back again in great anger, "I will pay half the loss and no more, and if you do not agree to this I will pay nothing, and I do not need to do in these days what I do not wish to do." Then Wong the merchant, being a man prudent and full of philosophy if he could not mend a thing, agreed to it, and he bore his half well enough, because he could raise the certain rentals he had, and he put the interest up somewhat in a place or two where he knew he could not be refused, and so he did not hurt himself. But Wong the Tiger at first scarcely knew how to get the sum that he must pay, because he needed so much for his vast army that although a stream of silver ran into his hands every month, and even every day, yet it all ran out again too. He called his trusty men into his own room, and said to them in private, "Is there any revenue we could have which we do not have now?" And his trusty men scratched their heads to warm up their brains, and they looked at each other, and here and there, and they could not think of anything. The hare-lipped man said, "If we make the revenues too heavy on foods and goods the people must have every day, they may turn against us." This Wong the Tiger knew was true, for so the common people have done always if they are too pressed and must turn or else starve. And although Wong the Tiger was by now very well entrenched in that region, still he was not great enough to be wholly careless of the people. So he must think of something new, and at last he thought of a chief industry in that town and of a tax he could put upon it. And it was the tax of a copper coin or two on every wine jar made in that region. Now the wine jars of that region were famous, and they were made of a very fine pottery clay and glazed blue, and when the wine was poured into them a seal of the same clay was put over the mouth and stamped with a sign, and that sign was known everywhere for a sign of good wine in a good jar. When Wong the Tiger thought of this, he slapped his thigh and shouted out, "The pottery makers grow richer every year, and why should we not make them share a tax with the others?" All the trusty men agreed to it as a very good thought, and so Wong the Tiger laid the tax that very day. He laid it courteously, and he sent word for the heads of the business, and he told them he protected them, for he protected the sorghum lands where the cane grew for their wine, and if he did not, there would be no wine for their jars. And he said he needed money to protect the lands, and his soldiers must be fed and armed and paid. But behind all this courtesy were the glittering weapons of his thousands. And although the pottery makers met together secretly and grew very angry and talked of 100 ways and of rebelling and of many things, they knew in the end they could not refuse, for Wong the Tiger could do what he liked, and there were many worse than he, and this they knew. They were willing then, since they must be, and Wong the Tiger sent his trusty men to estimate what the output of the jars was, and every month there was a good full sum of silver given to Wang the Tiger, and in 3 months or so he paid Wang the Merchant. Then, since the pottery makers were used by this time to the tax, Wang the Tiger let it come on into his hands, and he did not say the need for it was not so sharp as it had been. Indeed, he did need all he could secure, for he had a long road yet before the end of his ambition was come, and he was restless with his ambition, and he busied himself in many things. Then when he took thought and saw that he could not take much more from the people of his lands and keep them content, he cried to himself that he was too great for so small a place, and in the next springtime he must enlarge himself far beyond the confines he now had, for this region was so small that if a great famine came, such as might come any year under the cruelty of heaven, he would be undone. He had been protected thus far by his good destiny, for there had been no vast famine yet since he came to this place, and only small ones in this place and that. Then the winter drew on when there can be no war, and Wang the Tiger entrenched himself warmly. He saw to it that so long as the rain and the winds did not beat too bitterly, nor the snow fall too deeply, his men went out every day for training and exercise. He himself trained the best and cleverest, and these taught the others. Especially did Wang the Tiger take stock of his guns. Every month he had them counted before his eyes, and tallied with his account, both in number and kind, of what he had, and he continually told his men that if there was at any time a gun not there by its tally, he would shoot a man or two or three to keep the proportion what it was. Not one dared to disobey him. More than ever they feared him, for they all knew by now that he had killed even the woman he loved. He could be so angry even as that, and they all dreaded his anger, and leaped if he so much as twisted his black brows together. Then winter came down out of the bitter north, and the dark days came when Wang the Tiger could not go out, nor force his men out, and he faced at last what he knew was waiting for him, and that against which he had been so busy. He was idle, and he was alone. Now did he wish he were like other men who turn eagerly to gambling or to the drinking of wine or to feasting or to the seeking out of some woman to divert them from any trouble they may have. But Wang the Tiger was not so. He had eaten plain food and liked it better than a feast, and the thought of any woman sickened him. Once and twice he tried to game, but he had not the temper for it. He was not quick at dice or at seizing a chance, and when he lost he grew angry and felt for his sword, and those who gamed with him were alarmed when they saw his brows begin to twist and his mouth grow more surly than it was, and when they saw his big hand fly to his hilt, and they made haste to let him win every time. But this wearied Wang the Tiger too, and he cried out, "It is a fool's game, as I ever said it was." And he flung himself away furious because he was not diverted nor eased at all. Worse than the day was the night that must come, and he hated it more than the day, for he slept alone, and he must sleep alone. Now this loneliness by day and by night was not a good thing for such a man as Wang the Tiger, for he had a heavy, bitter heart that did not see mirth as some do, who have even more to bear than he, and the lonely sleep was not good either, for he had a strong and craving body. Still, there was not a soul whom he could take for friend. It was true that the old magistrate lived still in a side court with his old wife who was now dying of a consumption, and he was in his way a good and learned old man. But he was so unused to men like Wang the Tiger, and so frightened that he could only fork his two old hands together and make haste to say whenever Wang the Tiger spoke to him, "Yes, honored, yes, general." And Wang the Tiger was wearied of this after a while and scowled at the old scholar so fearsomely that he turned the color of clay, and he scuttled out of the rooms as soon as he dared, his faded robes dragging on his thin, old body. Yet Wang the Tiger held back his impatience too, for he was a just man, and he knew the old magistrate did the best he could, and often he sent him away quickly before his impatience grew too high, lest he might grow angry and do damage to the old man, and his hand fly out before he meant it to do so. There were his trusty men also, three good and true warriors, and the hawk was indeed a very good warrior and better than 1,000 common soldiers in his cleverness of guile. Still, he was but an ignorant man, and he could only talk of the ways there are to hold a weapon and the ways there are of sparring with fists, and of kicking with the right foot and the left in a circle before the enemy can recover himself, and such ways and feints of battle. And when he had told these over and over, and told how he had done this and done so in some fight or other he had somewhere, he had told all he knew, and Wang the Tiger wearied of him even while he valued him. There was that pig butcher, and he was very able with his great nimble fists and his thick body, that he could throw against a gate and crush it in, yet he was but heavy, stammering company on a winter's night. And there was the trusty hair-lipped man, the truest, best soul, although no great warrior either, and best when sent on some message, and his hissing and spitting when he talked could be no pleasure. Nor would Wang the Tiger stoop to talk with his nephew, who was a generation beneath him. Nor would he descend to feasting and carousing with his own soldiers, for he knew that if a leader does this, and if he lets himself be common, and play among his own men, and lets them see him weak and drunken, on the day of battle they will not reverence him or hear his command. And indeed Wang the Tiger took great care never to appear before his own men, unless he wore his full accoutrements of war, and unless he had his sharp sword he had used in such a way that now he loved and hated it too. Yet it was so keen a blade that he could never find its mate in the world, and he used to take it out and look at it and muse sometimes when he was alone, and think how if he brought it down upon a cloud even, it would cut it in two. Her throat had been as soft as that, and so the blade had done that night. But even if Wang the Tiger had had friends in the day, there must come the night at the end of every day, and he must be alone then perforce, and he lay upon his bed alone. And the nights in winter are very long and black. Through such long black nights must Wang the Tiger lie alone, and sometimes he lit a taper candle and read his old books he had loved as a lad, and which had first turned his mind to soldiering, the stories of the Three Kingdoms and of the robbers that bordered a great lake, and he read many doughty tales like these. But he could not read forever. The candle burned down to the end of its reed wick, and he grew cold, and he must lie alone at last in the black and bitter night. Then, although every night he put off this hour, yet the hour came when he remembered the woman he loved, and he mourned for her. But he did not in all his mourning wish her living again, for he knew, and he steadfastly told himself, that she could never have been one whom he could have trusted, and the sweetness of his love had been that he had opened his whole heart to her. No, dead he could trust her, but if she had been alive and he had prevented and pardoned her, still he would have been afraid of her always. The fear would have divided him, so that only half his heart would have gone on in his cause, and he would never have risen to be great. So he told himself in the night. Yet he pondered painfully on this, that the leopard, who had been but an ignorant fellow, risen but a little above his robber band, could have so won the love of the woman, who was no common woman, that even though he were dead, yet did she cleave to him, and even against her living love she clave to the dead man still. For Wang the Tiger could not believe she had never loved him. No, he remembered over and over with hunger when he thought of it, how frank she had been and passionate upon this very bed where he now lay. He would not believe that such passion had sprung up where no love was, and he grew wretched and weak, and felt that somehow he must be a lesser man, for all his pride and place, than the leopard he had killed, because his living hold upon the woman had been less than the memory of the dead man in her. He could not understand all this, but only he felt it must be so. And feeling himself less of a man than he thought, his life stretched ahead of him long and meaningless, and he doubted himself that he could ever be great, and if he did, then for what use, seeing he had no son for whom to achieve greatness, and it would all die with him, and what he had go to others. He did not love his brothers, or his brothers' sons enough to struggle in war and guile for them, and he groaned to himself in the dark and silent room, and he groaned out, "When I killed her, I killed two, and the other was the son I might have had." Then he remembered again, and he always saw her now as she looked when she lay dead, her strong, fair throat pierced, and the bright blood gushing out. When he saw her thus again and again, he could not bear it, and suddenly he could not lie any longer on this bed, no, although it had been washed and painted freshly, and the blood stains were gone, and the pillow was anew, and although no one had ever mentioned to him what had happened there, nor had he ever known where they took her body. He rose from the bed, and he wrapped his quilts about him, and sat miserable and shivering upon a chair, until the feeble dawn came and showed pale and chill through his lattices. So the winter nights wore on the same, night after night, and at last Wang the Tiger cried out to himself that this could not be, for these sad and lonely nights were making him less than a man, and they were sucking the ambition out of him. He grew afraid for himself, because nothing seemed good to him any more, and he was impatient with all who came near. And most of all did he grow impatient with his nephew, and he said bitterly, "This is the best I have, this grinning pocked ape, son of a tradesman. This is nearest I have to my own son." At last, when it seemed he must go mad, a turn came in his own spirit, and it came to him one night that the woman, even though dead, was ruining him as surely as she would have done if she had been alive and gone the way she planned. And suddenly he hardened himself, and it seemed he spoke to her own ghost to defy her, and he said in his own heart, "Cannot any woman have sons? And do I not desire a son more than any mere woman? I will have a son. I will take a woman or two or three until I have a son. I have been a fool that I do always cling so to one woman. First to a woman I never even knew beyond a few scattered words, such as a man may speak to a slave in his father's house. And I went sore for that woman nearly 10 years. And then there was the one I had to kill. Shall I never be rid of her too, and shall I go sore for another 10 years, and be too old to beget a son then? No, I shall be as other men are, and I will see if I cannot make myself free as other men do, and take a woman and leave her again when I please." On that very day he called his trusty hare-lipped man to him, and he called him into his own private room, and he said, "I have need of a woman, any woman of a decent kind. And go and tell my brothers that my wife is dead, and tell them to find me something, since I am busy with the wars that must come in the springtime, and I do not care to deviate my thoughts from the wars." The hare-lipped man went gladly on this errand then, for he had seen with jealous eyes at least a little of what his general suffered, and had guessed the cause, and he thought this good cure. As for Wang the Tiger, he could but wait to see what time would bring, and what his two brothers would do for him. And while he waited, he forced himself to plan his wars, and to think how he would enlarge himself. And he schemed how to weary himself into sleep at night. Chapter 21 By winding ways, lest men mark his hare-lip and wonder at his frequent coming, the trusty man came to the town and thence to the great house where the brothers Wang lived. He asked and found that Wang the merchant was at this hour, which is nearly noon, in his counting-house, and there the trusty man went at once to give his message. Wang the merchant sat in his own part of the counting-house, a small dark room which gave off the main market, and he was fingering an abacus and reckoning certain profits he had made on a ship's load of wheat. He looked up and listened to the trusty man's tale, and when he had heard, he said, astounded, his little eyes staring and his meager mouth pursed, "Now I can get even silver more easily for him than I can get a woman. How should I know where to turn for a woman? It is an ill thing he has lost the one he had." The trusty man, sitting cornerwise upon a lowly seat to show he felt his place, answered humbly, saying, "All I ask, my master's brother, is that you find a sort of woman who will not trouble our general and make him love her. He has a strange, deep heart, and he so fixes himself on one thing that it is a madness with him. So he loved this woman who died, and he has not forgotten her yet. No, although months have passed, he does not forget her, and such constancy in a man is not good for his health." "How did she die?" asked Wang the merchant, curiously. But the trusty man was very faithful and discreet, and he stopped himself as he was about to answer, because he bethought himself that when men are outside the ranks of soldiers and not acquainted with warlike things, they grow squeamish, and they cannot bear killing and dying as soldiers must, whose trade it is to kill, and be killed if they cannot save themselves by guile. So he said simply, "She died of a sudden flow of blood." And Wang the merchant let it be at that. Then he sent the trusty man away, first bidding a clerk to take him to some small inn and feed him with rice and pork, and after they were gone, Wang the merchant sat and mused, and he thought to himself, "Well, and here is a time when that older brother of mine will know more than I, for if he knows anything at all, it is women. And what woman do I know except the one I have?" Then Wang the merchant rose to go out and find his brother, Wang the landlord, and he took from a nail in the wall his gray silk robe that he wore when he went out, but took off in his counting-house to spare it wear. And he went to his brother's house, and he asked the gateman to know if his master were at home that day. The gateman would have let him in, but Wang the merchant would wait, and the gateman went in and asked a slave, and the slave replied that he was at a certain gaming-house. When Wang the merchant heard this, he went to that place, choosing his way as delicately as a cat over the cobbled street, because it had snowed in the night, and the day was so cold that even yet the snow lay there, and there was only a little path in the middle made by vendors and those who must go out for a living, or, as his brother did, for pleasure. He came to the gaming-house, and he asked a clerk, and heard that his brother was within at a certain door, and Wang the merchant went to it and opened it, and found Wang the landlord there gaming with certain of his friends in a small room made hot with a brazier of coals. When Wang the landlord saw his brother's head come in at the door, he was secretly glad to be disturbed and called away, for he was not over-skilled at gaming, since he had learned the thing late in life. Wang Lung, his father, would not have let a son of his gamble in city gaming houses if he had known it. But Wang the landlord's son was quick and able enough, because he had gamed all his life long, and even the second son had been able to gain a little pile of silver at any game he had a share in. So when Wang the landlord saw his brother's head come in at the partly open door, he rose readily and said in haste to his friends, "I must stop, for my brother needs me for something." And he took up his fur coat he had laid aside in the heat of the room and went out to where Wang the merchant waited. But he did not say he was glad he had come, because he was too proud to tell that he lost at gaming, since a clever man should win. He only said, "Have you something to say to me?" Wang the merchant answered in his scanty way, "Let us go where we can talk, if there is such a place in this house." Then Wang the landlord led the way to a place where there were tables for tea-drinking, and they chose a lonely table set a little apart from the others, and there the two brothers seated themselves, and Wang the merchant waited, while Wang the landlord ordered tea and then wine, and then, bethinking himself of the hour, he ordered some meats and dishes of food. At last the serving-man was gone, and Wang the merchant began forthright, "That younger brother of ours wants a wife, for his woman is dead, and he has sent to us this time. I thought here is a thing you can manage better than I." This Wang the merchant said, drawing down his lips in a secret smile, but Wang the landlord did not see it. He laughed out loud, and his fat cheeks shook, and he said, "Well, and if I know anything at all, it is such things. And you are right, but it would not do to say it before my lady, though." And he laughed and looked sideways out of his eyes, as men will when they talk of these matters. But Wang the merchant would not joke with him, and he waited. Wang the landlord sobered himself then, and he said further, "But this comes at a very good time, for I have been looking over the maids of this town for my son, and I know all the likely maids. I have a plan now to betroth the eldest one of my sons to a maid 19 years of age, a daughter of the younger brother of the magistrate, a very good, honorable maid. And my son's mother has seen some of the samples of her embroidery and handiwork. She is not pretty, but very honorable. The only trouble is my son has some silly thought of choosing a wife for himself. He has heard of such new ways in the South. But I tell him it is not known here to do such things, and besides, we can choose others he likes. As for that poor hunchback, his mother wants a priest in the family, and it seems a pity to waste a good straight son in such a way." But Wang the merchant was not interested in all these doings of his brother's family, for it is known as a matter of course that every son must be wed sooner or later, and his own sons also. But he did not waste his time on such things, deeming them women's duty, and he had put it all into his wife's hands, saying only that such maids as came into his house must be virtuous and stout and hard-working. So he broke in now with impatience, "But are any of the maids you saw fit for our brother? And are their fathers willing to have them go into a house to wife one already wed, as he has been?" But Wang the landlord would not hasten himself over such a dainty job as this, and he let his memory linger upon the maids, this one and that,
and on all he knew from what he had heard of